Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show, July 18th, 2010. We continue and move along. So here we go with a really nice tape for you to listen to this afternoon, this evening. Dr. Bell, are you going to talk?
45. You know, she wore those things 2 or 3 months and changed her whole hormone structure around, and bam, here comes Rompha, you know. Rompha's walking around and saying, you know, it's all due to the pyramid. She didn't understand. She starts writing about it kind of blindly. But I'll tell you what, she picked up a hell of a following and made a lot of money by trying out something after getting her rear end shoot at a health show in Portland, Oregon in 77. So, I mean, it does produce change. When I was in the Air Force, I used to smoke 2 packs a day. And I quit smoking. I get out of the Air Force. It was 59. I left the Air Force. No, it was 60 I got out. I think, no, 61 I got out. 61, first spring of 61 when I left the Air Force. And I first put the pyramid on in 1975, and I didn't know that I'd be wearing one. I developed the pyramid, but didn't develop to wear it. I developed a gold pyramid to be unidirectional. I didn't know I was developing a pyramid to wear. So when I put it on the head, I started noticing a real foul smell in my urine. And all this nicotine that had been built up years ago started coming out of my brain. I wasn't even smoking in those days. I hadn't smoked in many, many years. I quit smoking about 66, I guess 67, when I left NASA. I quit smoking. And here it was 10 years later almost, and I'm going to the bathroom and it smells like nicotine, because all this stuff was coming out. I mean, these are paths along the way. This was a guy down in Newport Beach started putting it on people's heads. A guy named Gary Couture was a chiropractor, and he had a place on West Cliff Drive, and he ran clinical studies on it. We put them on heads of students. We found that their intelligence increased. In other words, their cognition of what's going on around them increased. I got a phone call. We started working with students that were having impurities. In 1978, I got a phone call from this guy from Orchid Union. It was Orchid Union School? No, it was, up in San Luis Obispo, up in that area. And this guy, Sky Lewis, calls. 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm getting a call from a school teacher. He says, hey, you know, I says, why are you calling me? He's all emotional. He says, he put this pyramid on this kid, one of his students that was having grand mal seizures and was dyspeptic. And he says the kid wore it for about 30 days. And all of a sudden, in school, on that very day, after playing around with it for 30 days, he didn't have a seizure all day long. And he could read normally. And I got a testimonial notarized in my testimonials that this kid, Stan Alms, written in his own handwriting properly from left to right, didn't have seizures anymore. He says, I don't understand how these pyramids work. He says, the radio makes me feel normal. And I thought that was pretty, you know, things like that have happened in my life, and they were just side effects of what this is all about. So I'm telling you to look into this stuff and explore it and not take it lightly, because it's fun, but it's intriguing, but it also does many things. I can only explain on the surface about half the things that I do. Yeah. A pyridome is a gold-plated one, and you wear it on your head, and if you hook yourself to a biofeedback machine, it puts you in an alpha state instantly. I mean, like right now. You don't have to know how to meditate. It's calming. And that was the first one we made. And our market at that time was the drug addict, the biggest drug addict in America, which is the American Housewife, on Valium. And so we took a lot of people off Valium. And I'll tell you something. When you take somebody off Valium on a pyramid, they get a lot of withdrawal symptoms. Valium will disfigure a person if you're on too much of it. That is a nasty little drug. I didn't realize how bad the pharmaceutical industry was killing people until I worked with Valium addicts putting pyramids on their heads. You know, we had to put them on vitamin C and water and all kinds of stuff. It was really amazing. I'm just showing you at the same time some cosmic stuff, but I'm also showing you that I've been in the field of medicine for a long time, and I've learned all this cosmic stuff by working with grounded effects on an ailing or distressed human body. That's the only place I get the answers from. I don't get it from the cosmos. Sannyasi taught me a lot of stuff, but she made me work with people and learn all this stuff. Now, if you were to go into the carbon atom in the body, for example, and look at it, you'd find it just like the pyramid. And this energy, this is the concept, the legoic plane, the ethnic plane, modanic plane, the intuitive, and all the different planes of consciousness represented by a color, as we discussed, and a feeling, would be located in a chamber inside the Great Pyramid, or the carbon atom in your body. And why did God choose a carbon atom? Why even more, if I took the carbon atom out of the body, right, and I took that carbon atom out of the body, and I made it as big as the pyramid in Egypt, right? Real interesting comparison here. I'll show you. If I took the pyramid out of the body, the carbon atom, and looked at the base, right? If I took the distance of two sides of it, right, in pyramid inches, like it is in Egypt, right, I'd come out with 12,913.75 pyramid inches around here. If I took the entire base of the pyramid in pyramid inches, I would come out with 25,827.5 inches. So that means that the carbon atom, the pyramid, duplicates its exact rotation around the Pleiades perfectly within a quarter of a year. That's more accurate than our calendars are. We have to have leap year. And at the same time, the ancients knew this. Obviously, the Pleiadians built the pyramid. 2170 BC, the Pleiades were on the meridian at exactly midnight, and were seen through the south passageway of the pyramid. So what that means, metaphysically, is that this atom vibrates one time around the Pleiades in the waking consciousness, and it transcends the whole scene. We begin to move out, and this is no longer visible. We can become invisible. We can still remain intact, but this has reached another higher vibrational level, or another octave, you might say. A lot of interesting different characteristics and observations were made. Back this up a little bit now. Here I've drawn some of the different planes and shown the colors. The particles of each plane come down. When the particle comes here, as just as it enters the physical plane, science gave it a name called quarks. And they started giving quarks names like up, down, justice, duty, truth, psychological names, because science finally realized, normal science finally realized, that the observer and the experiment were becoming one and the same, and they interacted off each other. Now I'm back up to the red blood cell again. I've got to show you something here. It's very important. First of all, when you take a breath of air in, you're bringing in oxygen, a certain amount of oxygen. How many of you took an iron frying pan and you shine it up real good and it gets real bright and shiny? You know about that, right? And you let it sit in the air for a few minutes, right? And when it sits for a few minutes in the air, what happens to it? It gets rusty, right? It dulls. Just like if you cut yourself, the blood turns brown when it comes out in the oxygen, right? Now that's chemically how the red blood cell works in the body. You've just shined a frying pan and you've shot it full of oxygen, called a platelet if you want. You bring it down into the body and it reaches the cell. It's burned out. It has lots of carbon dioxide in it. By enzyme action, instead of creating rust, the oxygen is pulled off this platelet and the carbon dioxide is brought down on it again. That's the enzymic action of blood. And it's brought back out and it reaches the air again. Enzymes release it and this carbon dioxide goes off into the plant kingdom and oxygen from the plant kingdom comes back into the body. Okay? Enzymes are incredibly important. The alpha chain, the beta chain are very important. That's why in formulations, in nutrition, we put things like B15, B12, all the nitrilocytes in there. B12 through B17, I always use all of them in the formula. Why? Because they produce huge amounts of oxygen. What does cancer feed on? Anybody know? Lack of oxygen, right? Lung cancer. You breathe the air in your lungs, you can't get it out. Because the walls are blocked, creates a condition in the body. So it's very important to have these enzymes. Why do you think the FDA says we don't want you to have B15? We sure as hell don't want you to have B17. Why? Because your bodies won't get any oxygen anymore, because where are you going to get B17 and B12 from? You won't get it from your foods, because they strip it all off your foods. It's all stripped. It's gone. It's history. It's not there anymore. So that's why we put it back in our formula. You just have to know how to put it in and not get in trouble for it. When the FDA came over and says, well, we know you got B15 in there, but it's okay. I explained to them why I had it in there and everything. Then they offered me a job. It's how you approach them. But you got to realize the word carcinogenic doesn't exist in your vocabulary if you have the proper amount of oxidants in your body. It's very important. So this is the flow of energy, oxygen-wise, through the body. Now let's look at it again. Okay, now we've talked about the enzymes in the ferric transition, which is a valence change that causes us to move the carbon dioxide out and the oxygen in. Now let's look at the four iron atoms, the four pyramids, the four octahedrons that are the heart of the human being. In the plant kingdom, by the way, they are three-sided chlorophyll. Three-sided tunes you more on the mental plane, but way off the physical plane. In the blood specimens of the grays, they are also three-sided, just like the plant kingdom. They assimilate different. They are more on the mental plane, but much weaker on the physical and much weaker on the spiritual. So you've got to have an understanding of your geometry. And I'll explain to you what that means. If we have seven levels of consciousness in the existence of the cosmos, each one of those seven levels is shown by an initiatory chamber in the Great Pyramid. The Great Pyramid, breathing these seven, when Christ took his initiations in here, he had one experience for every seven levels of consciousness inside the pyramid there was. Until he reached the king's chamber and had an experience of God. In the queen's chamber, he had an experience of Aphrodite, the female aspect. And all these different experiences of temptations in the lower ones. This is when he was studying in Heliopolis. That means that the Great Pyramid has in it the essence of the consciousness, does it not? How could you not have the experience in there if the essence wasn't there, right? He just made it up, right? Well, everything is mine, so he could say, yeah, I made it up, so that's another chamber. It's not the main one. Now, if this then is the carbon atom, and the carbon atom is a human race, and these gases that we talked about, hydrogen, for example, are wrapped around it, then we look over here, and here's one here, and here's one here, and one here, and one here. In each area of the carbon atom is one of these levels of consciousness. And when you thread those carbon atoms throughout the body, which are in the shape of iron, the density of iron through the red blood cell, and you corkscrew, because it spins, these platelets spin, that's why they're round, you corkscrew this consciousness, by centrifugal force alone, you whip this consciousness through the body. And when you whip this consciousness through every single cell in the body, which requires blood, which all of them do, you whip consciousness into your body. In other words, you animate your body by your blood, by this principle. And if you're centered in that shape, if you're a geometrical shape, then you have been created in the image of God. But if you are, your threading device lacks a corner, you're not threaded by God. You have been created by a genetic mutation somewhere else in space and somewhere else in time, and you can be dealt with by God. So you get a little heavier now, understanding how the form is animated. You get the picture now. So when we subject ourselves to stress, being in that form, the geometry of God, and having that confidence, will attack anything through love, peace, and harmony. Because we can digest plants and create carbon atoms and red blood cells in our body, can we not? The Renticulans are afraid of people like me. And they'll be afraid of people like you when you understand what this is all about. Any questions so far? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. The point is that the carbon atom contains consciousness of life. Each section of the carbon atom, by its geometric shape, each portion of it, contains an exit and entrance point. For example, the third ray, the Holy Ghost energy, comes right off about here, which is on the dollar bill. It's the seeing eye of the dollar bill, which is a symbol of the United States. Okay? Each one of those consciousness that we've talked about that exist in the universe, in all of space and time, are represented inside the carbon atom. The carbon atom goes through the body in a chain, in disguised as an iron atom, in a red blood cell, and this rubs off on every single cell in the body, giving it life. This is life. Because life is a combination of all seven planes of consciousness in mutual agreement. And it gives the spirit a temple to live in. But also direction is important. To spiral up towards life, you go clockwise. To spiral down, you go counterclockwise. It's real simple to see how your polarities are. Stand up for a second. I'll show you a real simple exercise. Okay? Everybody face straight ahead. Okay? In fact, put your arms up, stretch a little bit. Okay? And then turn to the right and give a person a massage on the shoulders. And I'll go over here. Okay, now turn around and do the person behind you. Need a little massage too, right? See, getting back into the body again, huh? Okay, now stand by your seat. Still stand. Okay, now close your eyes for a second. Everybody close your eyes and relax. Okay? Now make a quarter turn, just a quarter turn, any way you want, wherever feels right. Okay, now stop and open your eyes. Now, how many of you went to the right? How many of you went to the left? See? The difference? Okay, sit down. To go up towards consciousness, if your chakra system is running naturally, you'll turn to the right clockwise. Like when you pull the cork out of a drain, it goes one direction, clockwise and south of the equator, counterclockwise. Your body's made out of water. You should turn in the direction the water goes naturally. If you're not turning in the right direction, it only means that one of your chakras is running backwards. Look at the chakra system or the endocrine glands. There's a vibration spinning something this way, another one spinning here, seven times. And the force interacting, which is called Ida Pigalle, this interacting force, being a flow up through the spine of central nervous energy. You know, I hit myself on the head, I can feel that up through the spine, right? This resilient force of energy going up and down is got a natural flow. If one of your chakras is running backwards, if you're interpreting a color wrong, bam, what happens? What happens is very simple. You'll turn the wrong direction. Watch in the old movies from the 20s and 30s and 40s, dancers, which way they turn in most movies. And you'll see where the polarity of most of Hollywood was in those days. And now I'm going to jump down into devices now. A little heavier into it. I've given you a basic understanding, I think, pretty quickly of how the body works. Everybody feel like they've felt something new? This is Ralph Sierra, an old friend of mine. He left the planet, but he used to do a lot of magnetic and pyramid therapy. If you had an athlete with a trick knee or something, you'd send him down to him. This was the beginning of the scalar wave technology patents, which is a lot of the technology we use now, which is where they took pictures of bugs in Vermont back in 1947. And the pictures of the bugs were down in crops that were blighted by insects. And they took these pictures and they put them in a black box and they'd kill all the, and with an insecticide, they would kill all of the bugs in the pictures at a remote distance. This is the Hieronymus effect. This is a negative application for scalar wave technology, but this is how it started. And it was patented back in 47. A lot of our equipment works off of old Hieronymus patents. This device here is called an irradiator. You'll see it on our booth out there. There's a little green booklet that you can get that explains how it works. Basically, it generates scalar waves. You can program it. In a self-help system, you can cause the irradiator, put a book in the bottom of it, point it in your bed when you go into your astral body and sleep at night. It will integrate the energy into your astral body, and you'll assimilate it. That's a simple application. We use these things in stages. We use 4 irradiators or 6 irradiators in a system to create effects. When we use 4, it's called a quad system. Quad systems are used to program events around the world. You can use it to enrich your life. there are people that came to my seminars every year that add systems to their life, and their life changed in bizarre ways. Kinds of people that use these systems are all over the world. One system was in Hawaii. A guy named Ron Spencer had it. It was a 7-radiator system. I've got a picture of it. He ended up on TV with it. He programmed it to do something. Matter of fact, his wife gave birth to a child in the system. The Dalai Lama came over and saw it. He said, this is the science of the second coming, previous to the second coming, the science. This is in the Vedas. So he gave Ron $10,000 and he went to Tibet. And Ron called me up on the way and he says, guess where I'm going? I says, I don't know. He says, Tibet. I says, you are? And he says, yeah. He says, the system did it. I says, oh, it did? And then he told me what happened. I says, and he says, guess the program. And it was pretty easy. He wanted to go to Tibet. Yeah. This is one that's very popular. This is great for ELF. This device, you'll see it on our booth out there, has a ground wire on it. It takes all the different energies that come in and cancels them into one energy field and sends them into the ground. Whenever you use positive devices like the radiator, you want to use something like the star orb, ground out the negative, because when you create a positive, you're going to create a negative, but you don't destroy the negative, you put it back into the earth. Yeah, the earth can absorb it, because it absorbed it through the planets. This is a larger version of it, called the Devastar, which we used in high-rise buildings. And this one, they cloned one of these, and they used it in the James Bond movie, Moonraker, as a device to get rid of the make it invisible. It's like a cloaking device. It was done in science fiction, but it was based on some real true principles. Okay, this is in the house at home. These are the scalar waves that are being generated here, because you can't photograph it. And they come up here and they burst off. They burst off in a diamond shape. And if you ever look at some of these Pleiadian ship pictures, you'll see the same energy field. And this field gets bigger, and it's like a trapezoid from the side and from the end, so it's a burst of diamond energies. And you'll see it in the old drawings on old Tibetan carpets and stuff. You'll see the same energy because they did it in two-dimensional graphics. You can see it actually pumping up there. Here it is coming up more intense. And we use a lot of crystal with this, with these systems. This is the meditation pyramid inside here. It's very important, by the way, to sleep in a pyramid now, because in 1929, when WLW, the Voice of Cincinnati, went on the air, they killed all the crops and vegetation within a 5-mile radius. They had 500,000 watts of power. The FCC stepped in and said, we want you to knock your power down to 50,000 watts, which is all they're allowed to have today. So we found that when I was at Pyramid Power 5 out of Santa Monica back in the early 70s, before 75, we made a science kit with a pyramid in it, and we had brine shrimp in it because they're like a single cell in the body. And what we did is we would sell through May Company and different stores this little pyramid that you'd put together out of wood, and these shrimp eggs. And you'd hatch these shrimp, and you put one hatched group inside the pyramid, and you'd put another one 10 feet away. The one inside the pyramid would live over a year because they weren't getting any radiation, and the ones that were 10 feet away would die in 6 to 8 weeks. So that's why it's important to sleep in the pyramid. I could go way beyond that, but I mean, that was the very basics. That's why you see the big pyramid. I've been sleeping in one for 16, 17 years. How many of you, when you go to sleep at night, you jerk? You know, that's ELF or microwave or radiation hitting you. You don't get that number when you sleep in a pyramid.
No, I don't.
We use a gold capstone. Yeah, very important.
We use zinc anodized gold and nickel, primarily, and mild steel. This is the radar that I was working on when I was in the Air Force on the UFO program. This is Point Arena Air Force Station in Northern California as we were building it. Every night, we used to see on this FTS-6 set here, and this FTS-35 up there, 5 megawatts of power in your backyard. We used to throw eggs up and throw them in the ground. This is 9 stories tall. This thing here, sometime when we scrambled, we saw a saucer come in, right? At Hamilton Air Force Base, we scrambled some jets. And guess what it was? What a saucer out was a Greyhound bus going down Highway 1. Because what happened is the wave of the radar hit a cloud. Cloud caused it to bounce back in the fog and hit this bus. And they vested in with a local search radar off the jets, and they found our radar was off track, and the building was this bus at 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, after you're home, and you're moving down the road, the radar is supposed to shoot out over your head, and all of a sudden one night there's a propagation from a heavy layer of energy, you know, like a fog bank or something, and that 5 megawatts goes into your bedroom. You think that doesn't happen? How many of you have had your stereo on here? Beep, beep, every once in a while. That's radar hitting your stereo system. They didn't shoot them out. They found out where it was. They just flew by it. I mean, they didn't blow the bus out of it, but they found it. A lot of times, we'd scramble for all kinds of stuff. That ASPS-6 right there, that banana-shaped thing. This here is the heights up. This would tell us how high they were. This here, these two, FPS-8 and 35, tell us how far they were, how far out to sea they were. And this here is an ANFAF-26, wasn't finished yet. This movie that we're doing, getting ready to do, called The Promise, there's a scene in there about this Air Force station and my experiences with that. Sleeping in the pyramid?
That'll
help a lot. That's what I do. Yeah, the whole bed. Yeah. Yeah, now you don't have to have a covered pyramid, you just have to have the frame. First got the idea back in the 60s, they tried to x-ray the pyramid for the Great Pyramid for hidden chambers and it wouldn't penetrate more than an inch or two. So the pyramid takes out microwave and it puts it into standing waves that are harmonious to the carbon atom in your body, so you get energy off of it. Yeah. Yeah. We make a 10-foot size. Back up here. One breath. That's the spaceship I worked on with Wernher von Braun. That went to the moon. The second stage of the Saturn. Well, now we pulled that out like that. We took pictures of it. It was the night after this picture was taken. The saucer came there. You see, at least 400 people saw it. These are pictures of pyramids on Mars. The big thing about the Martian pyramids is the face. It's the Sphinx. It's the female energy saying, be careful. And they painted it on the Earth, on the Mars, so the people of Earth could realize it. Because the Sphinx is female. John the Baptist, Holy Ghost, the female aspect, water. That's why the Sphinx is sitting by the Nile River, and the Nile River is the only river north of the equator that runs to the north. All the rest of them run south. There's a message there. It has to do with the atmosphere. This is a healing machine that I developed against time. The X1. What we did with this thing, there's none in production now. We just built a prototype a long time ago. This was part of the propulsion systems of a Pleiadian ship, but I didn't know at the time. We were using it for analysis. These generate rays of energy here. And what we do is we take a person, we want to check the cellular structure of the body. So we center this. There's 7 different subcolors of red. And we have the person look at this red beam like a TV screen. And we have their hand in a Corellian camera. And we take a picture of the electrical changes in the Corellian aura of the body with the energy coming in with the light and the sound, is the sound that goes with it. We use this therapy in our music now, by the way. Then what happens is if the person's colorblind, they don't have to say, I think that's green up there when it's red. We don't care what they say because their body tells a story. We don't hear nothing out of their mouth. Then we put it in green, it shoots right off the thyroid gland in the body, analyzes all of that. And then we go to violet, and we get a reading there. And that gives us an entire sweep of the hydrogen atom. So from a gaseous standpoint, we've analyzed every gas and every cell in the body. Then they get in this table here, and then you apply therapy and stuff to them. It's real interesting how it works. Entirely different. Radionics is only the phase of which, this is the gases, radionics is only a phase of transmuting this kind of energy through the ethers without a medium. In other words, it would appear to go from point A to point B without traveling through free space. It comes from the inside, like that. That's radionics. This is using a beam, a visible beam. This is a model of the time machine, if we were putting it together. I'm going to skip through a lot of these because I'm not doing a lecture on. That was the time machine as we started to build. That was the superstructure as we started to put it together. The main thing it had to house a big tube in the center where energy was. That went in the future, right out of dimension. The new one that I've developed, this will be another one. This is an interesting story. I asked Semyasi what this was because this was taken by a picture, a friend of mine in 1943. She says, are you ready for no space and no time? I said, Semyasi, is that Howard Hughes' ship or something? Because it was taken in 43, the year I was born, right? And she says, no. She says, look at it a little bit more. And I started recognizing this. It's exactly like my time machine. I says, well, what is that? And she says, well, think about it. She said, what's your next time machine that you build going to do? I says, it's going to be lifting off from the ground because to go into the past, it's an echo, but you can get entombed in the ground if the structure of the earth is different. So therefore, we have to have altitude. And she says, where would you go on your maiden voyage of a craft of that nature that could fly in the past? Where would you go first? What would be the safest step that you would go into? She says, that's a picture of your ship that you'll build in the future.
making its maiden flight in 1943, taken at White Sands, New Mexico by Dan Fry. And she says, when you understand that, you'll understand about space and time. They teach heavy lessons.
Well, we'll see if that reverses now as we are in July of 2010. We are resurrecting the X1 healing machine now. We're actually building a prototype. It's now been modified. And it's called the Quantum Biological Administration Machine. And we are hoping by early August to have an actual working prototype again, far different than the last one and a lot more advanced because we're using a lot of quantum features now that we didn't have in those days. In fact, some of the science hadn't even been discovered yet that we're using now. Basically, most of it hadn't been. So we're waiting now to see if that tape's going to finish up or I should go ahead and put another one on. I'm sorry about the volume levels jumping up and down today. That wasn't too cool. Some of these older tapes, that's what they do. But there's always a lot of information on them whenever I listen to them. I usually learn a lot myself about, I said that. So let me stop this thing and switch it over and see if there's any information on the other side. Otherwise, I've got another one to come right back up here with. Some of them went a little bit longer. Some of them didn't. So we're waiting now to see if there's any more information on this particular subject that we were talking about. It doesn't look like there is. So we have, phase two coming up. If you want more information on the QVAM, we're looking. I've put quite a bit of money into it and time, and we're always looking for some investment. But even without it, we'll have the first prototype finished soon. I guess that one had ended. So we'll pop that puppy out. And we got another one right here all ready to go. Hopefully the sound levels are a little better on this one. Yes, sir. We got to have better sound levels. Because bad sound levels aren't any fun.
This thing to unfold itself in full living color. The destructive tendencies of this planet are being harnessed, rather than the constructive tendencies. And as a result of that, civilization, because of its position in the galaxy right now, is being moved into a higher vibratory moment. And when it's being moved into this higher vibratory moment, our sensitivity to good and bad increases. Now, the Pleiadians came about the same time to our society as did the Greys. They also were... I contacted our government in 1956, but the government was already having a resolution with the Greys made in 1954, so they really weren't interested because the Pleiadians offered no technology to the government, whereas the Greys offered technology in exchange for human hostages. You realize that one out of four people on a milk carton has probably been abducted by a Grey at some point in time permanently. These people that have been abducted are brought into slavery. They're used for body parts. They're used for DNA research. They're used for a whole multitude of things. One of the things in the food chain that you can see very clearly is that with the ozone layer being what it is today, it causes the body to receive more ultraviolet. When the body receives more ultraviolet, the proper thing to do is tune the immune system up more into the ultraviolet spectrum. Therefore, you can feed off of the ultraviolet radiation. But instead, what they do is they orchestrate, through biochemistry, a method where they cause problems in the human body. Example, how many of you know what calcium is used for? What's one of the main uses of calcium? Once you stop growing. It's the number one usage of it. Heartbeat. It produces actin. Once you stop growing, calcium is the number one nutrient to keep your heart going, and that's what it's used for. And there's more of that used per day in the body than anything else. What does it take to assimilate calcium into the body? Does anybody know? What's the vitamin that takes? Which one? Vitamin D, which normally comes from where? Sunlight, exactly. Before the ozone changed and different things changed, vitamin D came in 18 international units
per one square inch of your body. So without vitamin D, without calcium, you're going to have heart problems, right? Second thing is, has to do with displacement. How many of you know the difference between a synthetic vitamin and a natural vitamin? What the difference is?
One works, the other doesn't.
Yeah, one works and the other doesn't. Does anybody know why one works and one doesn't? Why? Why do they work? Why does one work and one not work?
Usually it's organic.
The reason one works and one doesn't is when the brain fires off synapses in its receptor and effector sites, which are switches in the brain, when these synapses fire off, they produce electrical currents. When these electrical currents are produced, they send electricity down through three nervous systems, the autonomic, the parasympathetic, and the sympathetic nervous system. These firing off of synapses going through three different central nervous systems cause electricity to flow into every single cell in the body. So therefore, if you were looking at our body, on one level we're biochemical, on another level we're also electrical. In order for these enzymes and hormones and vitamins to be present, they have to be coming into the body, the chemistry to produce a hormone in the body which fires these synapses has to be present. It has to also not only be present, it also has to have electricity in it. And if you were to take a Curlian photograph of a synthetic vitamin, you'd find there's no electricity in it. Whereas if you were to take a Curlian photograph of a natural vitamin, you'd find a life force in it that has electricity. Okay? The life force itself is the next level up, which is called the science of electrical precursation, or the etheric level. It's the electrical precursation level. It's the level where the pyramids and the receptors operate on. So we have the electrical precursation, the electricity, and the biochemistry. So therefore, if you put a synthetic vitamin in your body where there is a natural vitamin present, and chemically they look the same, what do you think is going to happen when these two vitamins meet, or these nutrients meet electrically? One has an electrical charge on it, the other doesn't. What's going to happen? It's going to discharge the good one, isn't it? Is that not true? Which then is going to cause the aura field to collapse. Now, how many of you in here drink milk or eat butter? Okay. How many of you have noticed that vitamin A and D are plastered all over the label? Okay. How many of you are aware that this vitamin A and D is synthetic? How many, those of you that drink that milk and live on it and rely on it, will eventually have heart problems. It's very simple. It works real. It has nothing to do with cholesterol. You can have very high cholesterol levels and never have heart problems. What you have to do is look at HDL and LDL levels, lipoprotein levels in your body, to see how your body is absorbing cholesterol. Because if your body is low in cholesterol, your body might have to manufacture a lot of it just to make the joints lubricate and the heart pump valves work properly. So you need a certain amount of cholesterol. What you want to put in your body is chromium. Chromium is the first thing you want to put in your body to keep your cholesterol levels balanced. Is my slide projector almost here, my table? Hello back there. Is that table almost here? I really need it. So these are the kinds of things that you really need to look at when you start getting into nutrition. And when you first start to get sick, you don't start pouring vitamin C into your body. That's the wrong thing to do. Because a lot of the illnesses that go on around here are viruses created in laboratories in Sandia, New Mexico, and released into the atmosphere of this world. And so what happens when you start cramming vitamin C into your body for an illness, you end up feeding the illness rather than making yourself well. It's almost as bad as taking antibiotics for viral infections, creating super infections. So the whole holistic approach to what's going on in medicine doesn't work anymore unless you begin to understand the real ground rules of how to make things happen. When you start to get sick, the first thing you do is put in your body large amounts of chromium. Does anybody know why? It produces helper T cells. Helper T cells work in the immune system. Anybody that's ever had AIDS and been holistically treated will tell you that the first thing any holistic doctor will, that's fighting AIDS, will take large amounts of chromium. Then you put vitamin A into your system. Vitamin A is very important because it builds your immune system. Yeah. I take a milligram a day.
The picolate.
It's a niacin buffered form of chrome. We make a formula at Pyridine called XL Plus that uses this. This is one of the additions that we use in our formulas. It's very important to have it. Up to 1 milligram. It'll come in micrograms when you buy it. You want to keep that in your system. You want to keep a lot of vitamin A in your system. And then you want to add vitamin C. Because you got to steer your system in what area. DNA-wise, you have to steer your system in an area for the healing to take place. You can put nutrients in your body and they'll go to the wrong area. If you're dealing, for example, with hormonal deficiencies, one of the strong areas, the prime areas to deal with is amino acids. But if amino acids don't have the right enzymes present, they won't cross the blood-brain barrier, and therefore they won't produce the right hormone compositions. This is when you treat drug addiction, all these kinds of things. You get into the science. In 1971, when the Pleiadians came, and they began teaching me science, they weren't teaching me nutrition in those days. They were teaching me pretty much the science of electrical precursation, because I was coming from Rockwell, from NASA, from the Air Force, and I had been, electronics, physics background. I didn't have a strong biochemical background at that time, but I had a strong electronics background, a strong physics background. I had worked at the University of Michigan back in the late 50s and early 60s before I was in the Air Force. It was interesting to note one of the experiments there, one of the things that we looked at back in those days was the results of the bomb blast from Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And what we found was that some people were very close to the bomb blast in the Hiroshima and the Nagasaki blast when the bomb went off, called Ground Zero, and they suffered no long-term genetic radiation damage. Some others were 30 miles away, 40 miles away, and had vast amounts of genetic damage. From this research, they found that the ones that suffered no genetic damage were the ones that had large amounts of Fotai, ginseng, and Gotu-Kola in their systems, okay? These are important nutrients. In our vitamin formulas that I formulate, we always put large amounts of that in there. Because when you get up into the brain, these become electrolytes. A comparison would be, you could have a brand new sports car, but without a battery, it wouldn't start. And if you look at the battery, if the battery didn't have electrolytes, the battery wouldn't be any good. So one of the root things that you need are the electrolytes. What causes electrolytes to be depreciated in the brain primarily are smog, automobile exhaust, sulfur dioxide, things like that. There's over 500 chemicals running around this room right now in the atmosphere. So it becomes very important to have electrolytes. Our body is 5% mineral. The 5% mineral controls 95% of all metabolic functions in the body. That's why it's very important to have mineral supplementation. Without mineral supplementation, you might as well forget taking vitamins and enzymes and all the other things that we take, because they're not going to work. Okay? We got into manufacturing minerals when I began to notice that people were starting to falter when they start getting up on the metaphysical levels, or they start working with known with a parasympathetic nervous network in their brain. I noticed back in the 70s, people getting into meditation, people getting into Tai Chi and all these different Kung Fu and all these different forms of arts that tried to link their body and their minds together, oftentimes couldn't do it properly, and they became spaced out at best rather than, coming into a holistic point of view. I started formulating vitamins in those days, minerals into my vitamins, from the Great Salt Lake, because the Great Salt Lake has salt from the sea, and sea salt is very much like the red blood cell in humans. But the problem with that form of mineral is it's not a living form of mineral. So then we found that a red clay, which is only 2,000 years old, which is very fresh vegetation, in the crystal mines and in the Indian reservations, was a high form of especially trace minerals. So we began using that. How many of you in here right now are using trace minerals, just out of curiosity? How many of you have not noticed a tremendous difference in everything by not when you take them? You notice a lot, don't you? It's amazing. They're not exciting. You know, I mean, it's not like the excitement of getting into niacin therapy or getting into vitamin A or vitamin C, the all hyped up vitamins. But these vitamins will work a lot better if you have your minerals proper. Minerals operate on three different vibratory levels. The first mineral frequency is the base mineral. And the base mineral is your iron, your zinc, and your calcium. What these do is they create synaptic firing in the brain levels to produce energy, electricity, for your autonomic nervous system. Your autonomic nervous system is the nerve that makes your heart beat, makes your lungs function, allows your eyes to see, allows you to hear things, those kinds of things. Basic functions that you don't think about that are occurring. When you start short-circuiting these minerals and these basic functions from your body, that part of your central nervous system begins to close down, and you start going into all forms of early aging. The second frequency range of minerals is the mid-range, working through the sympathetic nervous system. The sympathetic nervous system is responsible for your feeling, when you're hot, you're cold, your body temperature, sensitivity, these kinds of things. Its center frequency in minerals is chromium, as we mentioned earlier, and it's also the threshold of the immune system. One of the areas of great attack right now by the Greys and by the government on the global depopulation policy is the immune system. If you look back into the 70s, the early attacks, the early genetics that were engineered and brought into our society were the herpes 1, 2, and 3. This later on evolved when they got some ideas, why not cross the cattle bovine virus with the sheep Vishnu virus and introduce a disease that was normally found in the sheep's immune system to a disease normally found in cattle causing pneumonia, and mix the two and find an area where this could grow. And if you ever look at the types of bacteria that's in the anal canal of the body, you'll find this is a perfect area for this type of virus to flourish. So what they did is they looked at some area, some group that would be active in the anal, and this was the homosexual, and in 1978 they injected 2,000 homosexuals with this new serum under a hepatitis B vaccine, and that was the beginning of AIDS in San Francisco. All 2,000 of them died. So then that spread to the far corners of the earth. Africa, South Africa is a real good, if you look at how their society behaves over there, you'll find that was a very good area to also introduce it. And so as a result, South Africa, I think 20% of the population now has AIDS. So it's growing very fast. We have, white population. I don't know. I've got the microphone on here. It's all best I can do. Yeah. So anyway, you begin to see society-wise some of the things that go on. Now, what we did, what the Pleiadians began to teach me about as we got into the 80s, we got heavy into nutrition, and we began to work with the immune system. So far, everybody that I think I've worked with, and there's been quite a few people, none of them have ever carried or gotten in contact with, come down with the AIDS virus at all. You might bring it up in your system, but it might also pass through if your system is up, because it has to get a hold of something in there before it starts to work. As the Andromedans came onto the scene in the late 80s and into the 90s, they began to teach us the holographic point of view. And when you get into the holographic point of view, you begin to realize that one heavy, concentrated, accurate sensitivity touch anywhere in the universe affects anywhere else in the universe. But it becomes necessary to become highly disciplined before you start playing around with holographics. Because if you start playing around with the science of holograms in the universe, it's like virtual reality. Virtual reality for society right now is something out of Lawnmower Man, right? It's something on a screen. With the Andromedans, holographic science is virtual reality of life itself. And they are now teaching certain people on this planet this science. When you get into that, we go right down into the DNA. We go right down to the chromosome level. We go right down to the structure of what causes genetic change in humans. We begin to understand it. Now let me see if I can get my slide projector going here now. Is it Yeah, it sticks. Let me just get this thing pushed down here. Okay.
Now is it light coming on?
Yeah, it looks like it is. Yeah, it's on.
See where it's at now. I'm gonna go back over here to it.
Oh, it's up on the roof. You guys can see it on the roof up there, okay?
Yeah. It's tilted back like it's...
Here we go, bring it down. Now what I'm going to do at this point, once I get this thing working here, focused in, the other way I think. Yeah, I'll do this all the way out here. See, focus. I guess it's way out of focus. Here it comes, yeah. Okay. There we go.
Yeah.
Now, let me just find the slide I want. For a certain slide here. Okay. There we go. It looks complicated and it sounds complicated in the beginning, but when you go through the ABCs of this, I'm trying to balance those lights so that I can see, they can see my board up there in the screen at the same time. So I'll put the front lights back on a little bit. But there's no front and back lights? It's all or nothing? It's all or nothing, huh? Right there. Yeah, that'll work. That'll work. Okay, now when we come from minerals, okay, we come into the world of enzymes. In order for minerals or vitamins or anything to go in your body, you have to have the proper enzyme balance, which is called the pH factor. Does anybody know what pH stands for? Potential hydrogen. So could somebody go on beyond that? Okay, beyond that, you have to look at what we're made of, okay? First of all, we're made up of carbon, which is a pyramid-shaped molecule. Then we're made up of hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, okay? Hydrogen is a proton and an electron. And it becomes very important because we're talking here about fusion on the sun and starlight, how it's produced, and we're talking about the life force coming into this planet. And it becomes very important to understand the pH factor. The pH factor also has a lot to do with chakras. How many of you have heard of different colors of your chakras? How many of you have seen the argument, oh, this color or that color, okay? Because people don't think in a dynamic form. People teach and think in a static form. And when you teach and think in a static form, nothing makes any sense. And you have lots of arguments. Even science now in orthodox laboratories is starting to realize that the thought process of the, especially in subatomic physics, they're realizing that where your head is at during a particular experiment has to do with the outcome of the experiment. More work is going on in separating particles coming in from the fourth dimension now than ever before. So what happens is, obviously, the proton and the electron, which the hydrogen atom is made up of, contains the life force. The life force comes down from the fourth dimension. We have seven planes of consciousness, okay? We have the physical plane, which has seven sublevels on it. The seven sublevels are your solid, liquid, gas, ionic, and three etheric states. Mass consciousness is the first thing in a society that has to do with the way the experiment is going to behave in a laboratory. 100 years ago, if you had had the same laboratories and the same equipment, the experiment would have behaved a lot different with a thinking process than it would today with the thinking process of the experimenter. There's several reasons for this. First of all, when you start thinking and understanding about the holographic side of the universe, you need to understand there is a change and what the nature of the change is. Then when you understand what the nature of the change is, then you can go in and dance with the changes. If, for example, this was a bunch of cavemen in here, and this was 5,000 years in the Cro-Magnon era, right? And we talked about solid, liquid, and gas. As soon as we get up to gas, there would be cries of astoundment. People would say, gas? What's a gas? So what we'd have to do then, because our society had never heard of gas, is we'd have to go out to the stream, which we knew about, and grab some water and put it in a pan, which would be solid, take some wood, which would be a solid, and start heating the water, and then boiling up the water into steam. And now, as the steam went through the room, suddenly we'd realize, as a mass group in consciousness, there's gas. Okay? So this is the integrity of the masses, the mass thought form of the masses. This is where you start interweaving into a fabric known as time and the exchange rate of spirit and matter, which gives us motion through time. Time can be looked at as a comet. There's always something in the universe that is present that explains some phenomenon that we would understand. If you look at a comet, you see the front of the comet, right, where the mass is. That's the present. If you look at a comet, you see the tail. That's the past. And you see the void that the comet is going into. That's the future. Now, where's this comet going to go? Well, it might have a regular orbit that it goes through, like Halley's Comet, but what if somewhere along that orbit a star decided to supernova and change the specific gravity of the orbit? Then the comet would change its path. Same thing in the course of human events, in this substance of the reality of this illusion that we're in now. It all is determined by several different things that are going on in the present. First thing you got to realize, there is no future. Future doesn't exist. From 1 second ahead of where we are now, there is no future. And if you could go into the future, you wouldn't see anything but blackness. There is the astral plane, which is the next level of consciousness, where lots of things are happening because it's a series of probabilities. It's a place where people that were living here in physical bodies have gone from these bodies and now exist. But it's not the physical plane, because being here now in the reality is being here now in the time in the physical plane. So you got to start to understand the next plane of consciousness. The next plane beyond that, the thought plane, with its two higher and two lower levels, the mental plane, the Buddhic plane, the ethnic, Modanic, and Logoic plane. Each one of those seven planes is a consciousness. Each one of those seven planes is a color. Each one of those seven planes is a sound. Each one of those seven planes has biochemical characteristics. So you begin to think of the color seven, the number seven, as an energy. And when you harness all of that consciousness, you've got to anchor it into the human body, and that's what the hydrogen atom does. The hydrogen atom brings that down in seven rays and vibrates into the human body. It directs all biochemical activity in the body. And all biochemical activity is getting energy and consciousness from the higher planes. That's the hydrogen atom. Now, the hydrogen atom has a polarity to it. It's just not a random atom. The polarity has to do with timing. Timing is very critical. I'll give you an example of some timing here. Here's a little bit of timing. And consciousness. The moon goes around the earth, right? 2,300 miles an hour. You have 15 days of full moon, you have 15 days of new moon. On days, you ever have days where everything you try to do, regardless of how perfectly you do it, everything still turns out like shit, you know? And other times you try to get something done and you try to screw it up, it comes together perfectly, right? Well, that what you have, you'll find if you look at those cycles, you'll find that you're working within the new moon phase cycle. You'll also find that the new moon affects water. Water being the tides. The tides are never the same on any 2 days. Okay? They're always different. And when the water changes on your body, when the tides change on your body by the pressures of the moon, so does your entire chakra system change. Your entire consciousness system changes every day. So you learn to work with Pleiadian science within the full moon and the new moon. And you separate these two, and you begin to understand where your thoughts and actions come from. If you're trying to initiate actions on the physical plane, you always do it during the new moon. Never try to initiate anything on the full moon, because it'll pretty much...
This is the end of side one. Fast forward to the end and turn the tape over to side two to continue.
Well, that's the end of the show today. Hope you enjoyed it. And we'll see you Thursday night, 5 o'clock Pacific, bbsradio.com.